Cloudcast Media.
Welcome to your next mission podcast with the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley, proudly presented by Cavalry Agency, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans.
Good day, veterans and families, and thank you so much for what you do and what you continue to do, and welcome to your next mission. A new initiative of the American Freedom Foundation. I'm Jack L. Tilley, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, and your host. Now, don't laugh about that. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to focus on veteran employment from the corporate point of view with Ms. Suzanne Jones and Mr. William McDonough from General Dynamics Ordnance and Tactical Systems, OTS. I have a couple of stories for you, including one from Jason Nazarenko, U.S. Army retired, on how he handled his transition. Now, before we get to it, let me say that we're extremely thankful to the good folks at Cavalry Agency, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans, our presenting sponsor, for making your next mission happen. They love our veterans and families. As I mentioned today, it's the theme is about veterans employment from the corporate point of view. I'm so excited to introduce Ms. Suzanne Jones, Senior Director of Human Resources, and Mr. Will Donahue, Senior Director of Business Development, Colonel U.S. Army, retired, General Dynamics, OTS. Welcome. It's so good to have you on the podcast. We want to learn everything you can tell us about what you're doing to help our veterans' employment with General Dynamics. But before we do that, we'd like to get each one of you to tell us a little bit about yourself. So, Susan, can you start out sort of tell the audience about yourself?
Sure. First, thanks for inviting us. And before we get started, we should say, you know, thank you for your service and to those of your listening audience. So I'm Suzanne Jones, and Will and I work for General Dynamics Ordnance and Tactical Systems, or for short, we call it GDOTS. So we're a global aerospace and defense company. We provide the U.S. military and its allies with extensive range of products that provide an advantage to our warfighter. So such as precision-guided munitions, crew-served and aircraft weapons, the Hydra rocket, filament wound composite structures, warheads, and pyrotechnic products. So I'm the Director of Human Resources for the Precision Systems Business Unit. It's a strategic business unit, and we call it PS. So if we use that acronym, that's what we mean. We have a couple thousand employees in 15 locations across the U.S. and have four main lines of business within our SBU: composite structures, integrated control systems, warheads and pyrotechnics, and tactical air munitions. So I've been with GDOTS for, oh gosh, almost 17 years. I worked at four of the operations and two headquarters. I started in Deland, Florida as the EHS manager, so environmental health and safety for their chemical and biological detection system business, and then moved to Charlotte. I was the director of ethics for the business unit. And it was armament and technical products at the time, but they merged with OTS in 2012. Then I went to Saco, Maine. I was their HR manager, and that's our guns business. And then I ended up in the Scranton Army Ammunition Plant and the Red Lion Facilities and Large Cal Ammo business. So for the past 3 years, I've been in the headquarters here in St. Petersburg supporting Precision Systems, and I'm a business partner and supporting employment, recruiting, employee relations, labor relations, talent acquisition, and learning and development.
Oh, wow. Will, can you, thank you very much for that. And Will, can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Sure, Sergeant Major. It's a great pleasure to engage with you. And I echo Suzanne's comments. Thank you for your service and your continued help to our veterans. I'm recently retired. Retired in November of 2020 after 25 wonderful years in the United States Army. Came from an Army family. I was lucky enough to get into West Point and spent my first 10 years on active duty in the infantry with operational assignments to the 101st and the 1st Armored Division.
Hua.
And then, yeah, that's right, Hua, Air Assault. And then transitioned from the operational Army over to program management. So I spent about 15 years developing and fielding capability upgrades to our service members. I take great pride in the development that we did for the Bradley Survivability Kit the Abrams survivability kit and fielding those to OIF during the 2008-2009 timeframe. And then the latter part of my career, I spent with the lethality at Picatinny Arsenal, where I was the product manager, then program manager for the precision guidance kit, all things mortars and cannon ammunition artillery. And most recently, that was in support of the long range precision fires cross-functional team. So I had the pleasure and honor of helping the Army establish Futures Command and really set the modernization efforts on a very healthy trajectory. I have two twin daughters, Avery and Miley, are 15-year-old girls. And maybe that's probably, if you don't mind, Sergeant Major, my first piece of advice is when you transition, definitely make sure that you take time to explain things to your family members early and often, because they've been an integral part of veterans' careers while they were on active duty. And certainly, you know, there's a long life after retirement, and it's key to have your family members there. So thanks again, Sergeant Major.
Well, you know, you bring up a couple of good points. One is I stayed 36, you stayed 26 or 25, I can't remember. But yeah, one of the things I tell you that I wish I did a little bit better as far as helping my family, being more connected with my family when I was transitioning out of the military. But, you know, just like you, I was all Army and stayed focused on the Army, and I missed a lot of the development of my kids when I was in the service, because I was always deployed somewhere. So, but great stories, and thanks for sharing it. Hey, Suzanne, what percentage of your workforce is veterans, and why do you think it's so important to hire veterans for the workforce?
So, well, I'm not sure about the total percentage across all of GDOTS, but within Precision Systems, we have about 10%, varying at each location from one of our lowest is 4%, and we have two that are 25 and 33%. So they vary. I'd love to see this increase. We're proud to support our military men and women, and we celebrate our working veterans. On Veterans Day, for example, each of our sites has a celebratory event, and we give gifts and you know, food and so on and so forth. So it's kind of a fun day for us. But to answer the second part of your question, hiring veterans is important because we're General Dynamics, Ordnance and Tactical Systems, a defense contractor full of innovators and thinkers delivering the best of the best. And who could better do that than our veterans?
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead, Suzanne.
No, so, you know, our working veterans exhibit the passion for the warfighter and product quality. They often exhibit the discipline to support the team and the mission, and they have traits such as planning, strategic thinking, and accountability that support our culture and our collective success.
Yeah. Do you think when you have, I'm going to follow on question, you know, I've got to ask you something. Veterans are more loyal or more loyal people when they come to work, or just as loyal, or they bring something different, I think?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I guess I don't judge the loyalty of the employee, but I think what they bring is, you know, they've used our products to a large degree, most of them have, and definitely understand the value of them and have a commitment to the customer, which is the warfighter, and to the product quality.
Sir, I'm on my script right here, it says Will, but I'm not going to call you Will. I'm going to call you Sir. You recently transitioned from the military, from the Army. You told us just a minute ago, and there's all sorts of ethics issues that people have to be concerned about, especially yourself as an officer in the United States Army. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely, and Sergeant Major, I think Suzanne brings up a good point that, you know, our users or our customers are the center of how we design things. And where that helps veterans and service members who are leaving the service is it gives them a leg up on the use of the product. And as the Army evolves into a more customer-centric design methodology and really modernization methodology, you know, it's critical that veterans who do want to go work in the defense industry understand, you know, what's allowed and what's not allowed. And I think, you know, in the gray area, veterans will tend to be conservative because they don't want to come across as being unethical. I think our Army ethos and our values, you know, definitely shape each of us to do the right thing. And so technically, the post-government employment letter, the PGE, is that document that for members who could be close to having an ethical conflict, they'll get that PGE, and the lawyers on the government side do a great job of doing the research and making sure that the right left and right limits are provided. But that group is pretty small. So, you know, key groups that definitely have to get a post-government employment letter are the contracting officers, contracting non-commissioned officers, those who have provided contracts or written contracts, And then also the program managers within the U.S. Army. And that's still a pretty small group. And then I think there's a larger group that tends to come from a requirement standpoint or comes from an experience standpoint. It used to be within TRADOC and now it's within Futures Command. And those individuals, I think, are great candidates to come work for those of us in the defense industry because they bring the relevant experience. They know what's in the mind of what the Army wants in terms of modernization and production. They know what the Army values. And they can relay that to the industry partners who are trying to provide a service. But of course, everyone's got to stay above board and make sure that we're doing ethical things. But then I think part of that comes up with friends who have retired alongside me or shortly thereafter. The question comes up, you know, during a terminal leave phase, what are the left and right limits? And again, the local legal office does a great job of explaining that. But to boil it down, you know, you can't build the government or get paid for the last couple of months of active duty while you're also approaching the government or approaching the Army and trying to sell them anything or represent the company. So there's a clear delineation there on your date of effective retirement that the day after that you can approach the Army, you can represent a company. It just can't be with the products that you either bought or you were the program manager for on active duty. I hope that answers the question, Sergeant Major.
No, I think you answered. One thing I was thinking about when you was talking about the right and left limits of enlisted corps and the right and left limits of officers, and the two are a little bit different, aren't they?
They are. However, I've observed in General Dynamics, there's a very fair representation of both officers and enlisted. And I think within the corporation, you know, we have a very group mentality, very teamwork mentality, and you know, there's different roles to be had on the industry side. But certainly for our non-commissioned officers that bring relevant experience on the combat platforms, you know, I recall from my previous days in the Bradley program that our best field representatives, field service representatives, FSRs, were ones that were great NCOs, and you know, had the master gunner training and those type of skill sets. And so I would encourage, you know, certainly our retiring NCOs to think about serving in a different capacity, you know, working for a defense contractor that is, again, trying to provide what the Army wants and not selling things just for the sake of selling something.
Yeah, you know, just a food for thought here. I was a master gunner, and I think I was probably one of the best schools that I ever went to in the United States Army. We're talking with Suzanne Jones and Will McDonough from General Dynamics, OTS. I don't want to forget that. You're listening to Your Next Mission podcast with me, your host, Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley. And we're blessed to be with here today with Ms. Suzanne Jones and with Sir Will McDonough with General Dynamics OTS. Before we continue, I want our listeners to reach out to me directly. Tell us about your transition. Tell us about the topic you'd like us to cover. You can leave a message at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatilley@yournextmission.org. Okay, let's pick it up where we left. Suzanne, how can I make my resume be noticed a little bit more in an interview, especially in my prior experiences? Is that relevant to have a resume, and how do I make it better for people when I'm out there trying to get a job?
That's a great question, or bunch of questions. You know, a candidate will stand out in a manner of ways, you know, how prepared they are to talk about themselves and their experiences, including those unique experiences they might have had, or if they have a network that we may know. So what's, I think, important is that the candidate understand their transferable skills and how they can apply it to the position. You know, they should have an interest in the company to which they're interviewing. You know, I work for and recruit talent for a defense contractor. The desire to make a difference, perform work that matters, and deliver the best of the best are the key attributes in the candidate and necessary for success in our culture. You know, some additional tips: be professional, dress professional for the position, be confident, engaged, ask questions about the opportunity, and always follow up after the interview.
Yeah, I think another thing is really important. Don't use acronyms. Don't use acronyms, because I think a lot of people in the military, you know, want to use acronyms as especially if they're putting in a resume. The other thing I think I thought was always interesting is I always had two resumes. I had a military resume and I had a civilian resume as I went out there. And the other thing, and we may talk about it a little bit later here, but I always had a mentor. Somebody would look at that resume and say, hey, look, this is a great idea, or maybe you ought to cut that out, or maybe it's too wordy or whatever. So that's that gets you in the door. I think that's the key. Along those same lines, what are some of the key things that look for in a resume? I think you probably mentioned a lot of them, but is there key things in there that you want to make sure that you got correct?
Yeah, so generally we look for indications of the skill to perform the job and the will to do it. So I look for skills and experience applicable to the job to which the candidate has applied, and then those transferable skills, interests, education, volunteer activities, and such that tell me tidbits about the person, their capabilities, their pace, and their interest.
Yeah. Okay. Will, Suzanne mentioned recruiters may look for hiring managers. What would you make a candidate? How would you make a candidate stand out when he's looking for them?
I think, Sergeant Major, the services all provide a great opportunity to refine one's leadership abilities. And I think that goes for both the enlisted ranks, non-commissioned officers, and officers as well. And I think the brand of leadership that comes out of the Army specifically relates well to the corporate world, because I think one of the things Army does well is it promotes, we call them subordinates in the Army, they're probably more teammates on the corporate side. But we have a desire for collective success. We always want the company to do well. We always want the squad to do well. And I think when most veterans leave the Army, they leave with the perspective that as long as the team is winning, that's what's most important. And I think that requires some emotional intelligence. I think it requires a certain level of maturity not to try and grandstand and be the one that gets the credit. And I think that crosses over well. To Suzanne's point, you have to get into the interview, and I think you have to be able to relay that, to talk about yourself and how you've had successful experiences and sometimes how you failed, to explain to how you've grown. And so the people who are hiring, I think, want good fits. I think veterans should be aware that not every job interview is going to go well. You probably have to practice it. You have to get some repetitions under your belt. And frankly, there may be a couple of jobs that you take and you look back on it a couple of years later and you're like, well, that wasn't a very good fit. But the good thing about retiring fairly young, and I think we all retire from the service fairly young with plenty of work time left in our lives, is that you don't have to get it perfect. And the marketplace is so healthy right now that I think if you're working at the wrong company, you can learn your lessons and kind of like a PCS in the Army, you can move to the next company and build upon your resume and build on your experience set. So it doesn't have to be a perfect score up front.
You know, you made me think of something. I've almost started laughing there a minute ago. When you talk about retiring fairly young, when I got out, I was fairly old. And does that hamper anybody? I mean, I was, to be honest, I was almost 55 years old. I spent a long time in the Army, and I didn't think I'd really fit in. So I ended up starting my own company and doing stuff, and it really worked out pretty well for me. The other thing that's important and it made me think about, too, as you was talking, is being a good listener and being a good communicator. Could you talk just a little bit about that?
Yeah, Sergeant Major, I think I realized late in my Army career, and I still believe it to this day on the industry side, I only have one problem, and that problem is always communications. It presents itself in many different fashions with different dynamics, but the only problem that leaders, I think, are really trying to solve, our communications gaps. And so I think, as long as you don't look at my PT score at the age of 48, what that would look like, 48 and 55 still have, between 10 and 15 years of runway left. And
yeah.
I've seen a couple of hiring practices go on here in General Dynamics, and we're very sensitive that ageism, isn't tolerated. And so I think maybe what potential applicants should be looking for is about how long they would like to work for a certain company. And, neither the company nor the potential applicant or hire wants to leave prematurely. I mean, both sides want to have a longer term relationship, but that longer term relationship doesn't have to be more than 10 years. Suzanne, maybe over to you as a better expert.
No, I think you're completely accurate in that. I think that, that there's plenty of runway for employees coming out of the service. Not every job is going to be an exact fit. But, you use your transferable skills and you go for it. You never get the job you don't apply for or go for. So.
This is something I wasn't going to ask you, but again, you're making me think of all sorts of stuff that I'd ask somebody if they're coming in. What's the, for both of you now, I think this is a good question. What's the one thing that would turn you off if you was interviewing somebody?
Oh, I probably have a list. So.
Well, yeah, for me, Sergeant Major, it's not necessarily a pure turnoff, but you know, as a second lieutenant, when I was 22, there was a certain language that I would use in that type of unit that I, of course, I wouldn't use in a corporate setting or even, you know, as an older officer. And so I think how veterans present themselves and communicate, it doesn't take big words, but it does reflect on one's personality and how they're going to operate. And certainly today's workplace is no place, you know, for any type of sexism, ageism, you know, behavior that is untoward. Yeah,
absolutely.
And I think it's just something to be sensitive to, that we have a very diverse workforce, and that's the future. And we have to adjust our language to be professional.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing is most of us, and I was really trying to lead you into this one, most people are type A coming out of the military, are type A personalities. And they're more transmitting versus listening. And so I think for me personally now, I had to pull back a little bit to make sure that I wasn't so aggressive, that I would allow the people, that our person I was talking to you know, to get their words in. But I just, and I really had to adjust a little bit. Like I said before, it took me a while to do that. And I think that's probably why I opened my own company up, because I couldn't get anybody else to be quiet and I wanted to talk. So, Suzanne, how important is having, you know, you hear people talk about elevator speeches and how can that at career fairs, is that something that's really important? And how can it make it less awkward when you're talking to somebody?
Well, that's a good question. So personally, I like an elevator pitch. You know, I like to converse with the candidates and appreciate their willingness to engage. You kind of mentioned what was a turnoff, and one thing would be, you know, just somebody that's not willing to engage or talk.
A little shy or something, or just want to.
Yeah, struggles with the, you know, conversation or answering questions. But at a career fair, the pitch is so helpful, because imagine, you know, you're getting a resume, and I can either stand there and read the resume while I'm standing next to the person, or we can have a conversation and they can give me, you know, an elevator speech, you know, tell me a little bit about themselves, you know, to demonstrate their preparedness, the ability to think quickly, you know, are kind of attributes of that elevator speech. But, you know, use it to introduce yourself and make a connection to the interviewer, the job or the company, you know, make yourself memorable. Of course, do that in a positive way. But then you can follow up with the questions and comments that demonstrate your interest in the company and the opportunity that you're interested in. So, you know, for example, before a career fair, or if you're at an interview, you know more about the company or the company you wish to meet with. You know, for example, you could say, you know, I understand the GDOTS makes the M2 machine gun. You know, I use that gun. It's been around forever, and adopting the quick change barrel several years ago really made a positive difference. Or it's something, you know, that makes that connection and makes you memorable to the person that you're speaking with. You know, when we go to a career fair, we may meet with hundreds of people. And so, you know, you want, when you respond back and follow up, you want them to remember who you are. So if I had to summarize that, you know, just be ready with a short elevator pitch, you know, practice it in front of a mirror so you don't sound so rehearsed. Watch your body language and give us something important about you and make that connection.
Oh, you hit a gun, Brian. That, watch your body language. And I think that that elevator speech should be about 30 seconds, 45 seconds. Probably not longer than that. But I think the other thing is good eye contact. So you're talking to that person. Don't be distracted. So I think that's great advice. It might be a good time to mention that your next mission is going to be doing a career fair at Huntsville, Alabama on August 11th. So hopefully we can get you guys in there and join us with that one. Hey, we're talking to Suzanne and Sir Will about, you know, things to help our veterans out. So we're going to take a short break. Remember, you're listening to Your Next Mission.
The Purdue Global Advantage, a name that opens doors, providing affordable online education for hardworking adults. For a personalized, innovative, and world-class education, learn more by visiting purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome back. I'm Jack L. Tilley, the 12th Sergeant Major in the Army. We're talking with Ms. Suzanne Jones and Mr. Will McDonough with General Dynamics OTS. We're at one of our favorite parts of the podcast, where we get to hear from our veterans. Today, we have with us Jason Nazarenko, former Black Hawk helicopter pilot who served in the Army for 23 years, to tell us about his transition. Jason, we're glad to have you on the podcast. Let's tell us your story.
You bet, Sergeant Major. Well, thanks for having me here. I really appreciate it. And I just have always had a passion for helping veterans, and obviously was one myself. Like you mentioned, 23 years in the Army, just recently transitioned. I served the majority of my time there at Fort Campbell, started out at Campbell, went to Bragg, Campbell, Korea, did a few of that, and then ended up back at Fort Campbell, flying Black Hawk helicopters, and then assessed and ended up in 160th. That's where I retired. So my last 10 years were with 160th Special Operations right there at Campbell, and had a blast. Loved every minute of it.
Was there anything in particular? Did you have any issues or problems when you was transitioning out of the military? Or
so I really did, Sergeant Major. I can actually, you know, go into more detail there. So I was when I had decided to transition, when it was decided that, hey, this is the time to retire. My wife and I kind of made that decision. We dropped our papers. The plan was to move near home. I'm from a little tiny town in Arkansas called Cotter. And we were going to move near home. That way we'd be kind of close to home, visit family. And so I started networking. I was actually the first fellow with Hiring Our Heroes and was linked up with Walmart. And that was going really well. I actually helped them build their curriculum for other veterans as they were getting ready to transition out. Well, anyway, as we, in the process, getting ready to retire, my mom actually passes away unexpectedly. Wasn't part of the transition plan. And when it happened, we ended up back here in Cotter for her funeral. And that's when we decided, hey, we're not going to come near home. We're actually going to come all the way home. So transitioning out for me, I had set myself up prior to transitioning. I had checked all the blocks that I could. I had a bachelor's. I had a double master's. I was working on a PhD, just finishing up a dissertation. I had a PMP certification completed. So I was a project management professional. I had black belt Six Sigma certified as well, and had really tried to set myself up. And so when we made the decision to come to Cotter, population less than 600, obviously that was going to lead to quite a few challenges.
Yeah.
And we understood that. We went into it knowing, hey, what we're going to do, I don't know yet, but at least we know where we're going to go. And my wife was really excited. She was from here as well. So moving back home, it was definitely a homecoming. We ended up renovating a house in the process. I'd say it was more than a house. It was a historical building in the downtown area. If Cotter actually has a downtown. But it was this really rough building, and we renovated that. I started getting involved with the city, utilizing some of my experience to be able to help them out. Wanted to try to help the city grow. So working with the mayor, he asked me if I'd volunteer to be the Chamber of Commerce president, which was at that time,
oh wow,
pretty much nothing.
Yeah.
Our chamber was, it had really fallen apart. I mean, everything in the city had just kind of went downhill, and there was really nothing left of the chamber. So when I took it on, it was a huge project. I decided I'd do it, I'm always willing up for a challenge, and I wanted to help my community that had been there for me the whole time I was in the service. So chamber president, and we went off into a huge start. I mean, I just recently retired. So it was October 2018 is when I retired. So obviously not long after that was when COVID hit. Right when COVID hit, one of the first things I did was said, hey, we need to do something. We need to continue to propel forward here in Cotter. And I asked him if he minded. I got a hold of the Department of Health. I wrote the business plan for it. And then we started holding movies in the park down here. First time ever. Cotter had never had movies in the park. Huge success. I mean, we had five movies throughout the summer, had 150 people out there. We also went forward with another plan for the Trout Fest, which is coming up here on the 1st of May. So expecting over 1,000 people. So I just jumped in and got involved job-wise. Obviously, I did find a job. We came here with the retirement, and that helped for sure. But I was able to find a job about 45 minutes from here flying for AeroVac. So helicopter air ambulance company. It's about 45 minutes away. The schedule is good for me. It's not great. It's not what we were looking for. Perfect. We wanted to spend more time together, but it worked, and it has definitely helped me. And I kind of mentioned that house that we started renovating, that building, that historic building, that transitioned into a business all of its own. We've actually taken on four major renovations. We're in the middle of two right now. One is a historic church that's 107 years old, and the other is the oldest standing building in this town that's 118 years old. And I mean, it's, you know, we've been able to add value to the town, bring life back into the town, and obviously, you know, build a portfolio for ourselves as well. So,
Jason, I just listened to all the things you're doing. I'm sitting there thinking about the fact that all Army, not just Army, all military people get out and want to get involved with all the stuff that and make it a better community. So let me thank you for what you're doing, and thank you for sharing your story with me. And I appreciate it. Again, I want you to reach out to me and tell me your story. Call me, leave a message, 844-424-1134, or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your story. Okay, we're heading back into the final segment here with you guys today. I know this has been challenging. You gave a lot of great information. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I have. I've had a great time just talking to you. Of course, being an old Sergeant Major, I want to talk as much as I can. That's for sure. Well, recruiters often say they're looking for things, people that are talking about problem solving, critical thinking, or cultures. In addition to those kind of things, what kind of candidates are you looking for?
I think, Sergeant Major, the services do a good job of moving us around in our formative years. And, that allows us to solve not just problems, but with different groups. So I think we bring to the workforce a diversity element that is an element of flexibility and willingness to evolve and adjust our roles to meet the higher need. And so we all have to work for bosses, and as long as the boss's team is winning and everyone's getting along and we're working towards collective goals, I think that's something that the veterans bring to the workforce on the corporate side more naturally. That's got to be balanced with, approaching the workforce. You want to interview the company as much as they want to interview you, because you're both sides are looking for a good fit. And so I think as a part of the feeling out process or the research or the interview process, I would encourage candidates, veterans, to really ask good questions to establish whether their commitment of time to the company or to the organization or the Chamber of Commerce is gonna win for both sides. Sometimes it's not gonna work out, and the earlier you identify that, the better. But I think that the team organization and the concept of collective wins are major, something that veterans tend to bring well.
Yeah. Suzanne, when do you start the networking process? Or tell us a little bit about the networking process. I think it's really important.
Sure. So the networking process, and Will can probably talk a little bit if you like about how he can recommend it while they're in the military. But we network a variety of different ways. I mean, we've gone to the Warriors to Workforce job fairs. There's LinkedIn. There's reaching out to former military people that currently work at the company or might have some referrals. So and when they want to contact us to network, if that's the next part of the piece of the puzzle, I guess that they can get our attention definitely. And I don't mind when an employee shows the initiative to reach out on LinkedIn or sends me an email to check in and ask the status of a job that's posted. Like everyone else, I'm busy, but I do make the effort to follow up on those types of contacts. So, go online and network, understand what jobs are out there, follow the companies on LinkedIn that you might be interested in, and keep track of, what's going on. You might find a little bit more about the business and see if you really like it, jobs that you're really interested in. And then you'll find out who else also works in those businesses, so that you can reach out to them and message them on LinkedIn.
I used to tell people about 2 years out, you start that process, and anybody that gives you a business card, keep it. And when you start that process, make sure you send them an email and say, hey, I'm Jack L. Tilly. I'm retiring from the military. Here's a copy of my resume. So the farther out you start, I think the better it is for you. I think a lot of people sometimes wait until the last minute to do that process. Again, education, having your education before you ever get out. We're talking to Will and Susan from General Don May, OTS. I don't want to forget that. Thank you for listening today. Please visit us on our website, yournextmission.org, and leave a review. Our website features our partners who have so many services that can provide assistance in your transition from the military. You can also apply for jobs such as those available in General Dynamics. hopefully you have a lot of jobs for our veterans and stuff. We want to assist you any way that we can. Also, please follow us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. And I can't say enough, you know, this time I'm going to call you Will. Suzanne and Will from OTS, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. You're making a difference with our veterans. And Jason, sir, chief, thank you so much. This is a great having you on the podcast. And I want to finish this podcast with a little story of mine and experience. You know, the Army really changed my life. A lot of people don't know that, but when I was growing up, a lot of people are poor, but the last bedroom I had forever came in the military. I lived in a closet. I lived in a laundry room, and I lived there for about 2.5 years as a young kid. And I just had a bed big enough I'd put in there and had 3 shelves I'd put my clothes on and a little vent I'd look out of when my kids, for our friends, would come at night and sort of peek in there and talk to me. You know, the Army's been good to me. It really changed my life and allowed me to be who I am today. And so when we talk about transitioning, when we talk about veterans, when you talk about communicating, we're really talking about helping our families out, helping the people that have did so much for us and continue to do so much for us. And I also think about the veterans that really have given up their lives in defense of our country. So it's not about you, it's about us. It's about companies like OTS that care so much about our veterans and want to do all they can to help our veterans and families each and every day. I'm Jack L. Tilley, and I'll see you on the high ground. Have a great day. Hooah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.
Cloudcast Media.